Good morning. If you would turn to the book of Philippians, we're going to continue our series on being a heavenly colonist and focus on the thread in this book of imitation. Paul invites the Philippians twice to imitate him, and he tells them to also imitate other people who are following the example of Jesus. So we'll think about this and how it relates to us as a colony this morning. Because if you think about trying to build a successful colony, a really important thing that you're going to have to do is gather blueprints and plans of other colonists and other people who have in the past tried to do the same thing that you're now trying to do, and study those blueprints and see what you can learn from them and see how you can build upon them to form your colony wherever you're trying to put it. When we look back at history, we see that that's exactly what people did. We've been talking about the Puritans, the Pilgrims, who came to the shores of Massachusetts 400 years ago. That's exactly what they did. So before they set sail in the Mayflower, they talked to people who knew what North America was like. In fact, everybody heard of Captain John Smith from the Pocahontas story. Well, he actually was a real-life person. And he really did travel around North America and kind of scouted out and be kind of an explorer around these parts, not just in Virginia. And so the Pilgrims actually knocked on his door and they talked to him. And he had drawn up maps of the shores of America. And they're like, yeah, we'll take that, we'll take that, we'll take that. We'll buy all the books and the maps that you've made. And they studied those, and they brought them with them on the Mayflower so that they could have some idea of what past people had done in their attempts to look around and set things up. And that's exactly what we want to do as colonists for Jesus, colonists of heaven who are trying to take the culture of heaven and bring it down to planet Earth in our lives, in the lives of this community, and hopefully to bring others into our colony as well. So what God gives us for blueprints are obviously the scriptures, but God's plan is not just for us to look at this book, although that is obviously the utmost importance. I don't want to deny that or take away anything from that. But God's plan is also for us to try to look around to see people who are actually taking this and putting it into their lives and imitate those people, not just imitate the characters that we read about in the pages of this book. Both are important, and both are the plan of God. And so we need to become, the point of this lesson is we need to all become disciples who are worth imitating. We want to be people who others look at us and they can see Jesus in us, they can see how to build a colony, and they can join us in that effort. So that's what Paul's going to do here in this book. So I want to start by going to chapter 3 of Philippians. And I want to read with you verses 17 through 19. 17 through 19 of chapter 3. Paul says this to this entire church. Brothers, join in imitating me. And keep your eyes on those who walk according to the example you have in us, for many of whom I have often told you, and now tell you even with tears, walk as enemies of the cross of Christ. Their destruction, their end is destruction, their God is their belly. Some translations that you may be using may say appetite, same thing. And they glory in their shame with minds set on earthly things. But in 20 and 21, he says, we're not of that. We know where our citizenship is, and we know what that means. So Paul's saying here in 17 through 19, what we have to do, what they have to do, is actively choose, not passively, if I just get exposed to the right person. No, actively choose mature Christians to mentor us. I think all of us would probably, in theory, be on the same page about the message of the world that it's not right to tell anybody that they're wrong. I think we would probably agree that that's not the right message to be preaching to other people. That sometimes, like we talked about in Bible class this morning, sometimes people are wrong. So we agree about that. But what happens on Monday morning or Monday afternoon or Monday night when another Christian comes alongside of us and opens the scriptures and says, you know, you really need to think about that. You really need to not do that. It's easy in moments like that to say, well, I understand that that's the way you think. I understand that those are your thoughts, but they're not my thoughts. And my thoughts are just as valid as yours or anybody else's. You can't tell me to think a different way. In that moment, we have demonstrated that what's in our heart is actually more like the world than we would probably care to believe. And so we need people to mentor us. We need this. All of us require this for our Christian walk. I don't care what age you are. I know of godly men I respect who have told me, and they are decades ahead of me, and they tell me, you know, there are people that I call up on the phone when I'm wondering about how to handle something, or there are people who come alongside of me in my teaching or in my life and challenge me and sharpen me and help me, and they are in their 50s and 60s. All of us need mentors. But the question is, who are we choosing to do that for us? So Paul says to this entire church, you all need to imitate me. Now let's be honest about this. Does this sound a little arrogant? Does it? I mean, what if this happens, you know, outside in the parking lot this afternoon? Like another brother or a sister comes up to you out there and says, you know what? Your marriage should look like my marriage. You know, the way that you talk, that should sound like the way I talk. You know, you in your life, you need to come alongside, you need to imitate me. How would you react to that? I mean, I will be honest with you. It would depend on who was saying that, I think. But I would just say, in general, I would probably not react very well to that. You know, emotions and feelings and thoughts such as, oh, did you wake up perfect yesterday? Who are you to tell me how to live my... You're not walking in my shoes. You don't see all the situations that I deal with every... You don't know... You can't do that. Imitate you? You got plenty of stuff to work on yourself? I think maybe I'm not alone in probably having some of those thoughts or those emotions. But actually, what Jesus tells us here is... other Christians who do know what they're doing have a right to come alongside of us and say things like this. They do. Because Paul is doing that here. And we might look at 3:17 and we might say this. Well, yeah, Paul wrote that to the Philippians, but for crying out loud, he was an apostle. You know, of course the apostles could say things like that because they are Jesus' special messengers. They had authority that we don't have. They did miracles. They did all kinds of stuff that was amazing and superlative and above us. Of course Paul wrote that. Of course you could say, imitate me. But if you keep reading in verse 17, you notice that Paul is not just saying, imitate him. He's also saying in the text, and keep your eyes on those who walk according to the example that you have in us. He's not just talking about apostles in that verse. He's talking about any Christian who has a spiritual, mature mind and heart and knows how to serve the Lord. You keep your eyes on those people too. They're following us as we follow Christ. Anybody who knows that and does that has the right to say, hey, follow my lead. And evidently, this is just something that Paul often said to churches. He doesn't just say this to the Philippians, because if you go to 1 Corinthians, he says it a couple of times to that church. And boy, that church really needed to imitate Paul. They had a big, big need for that. 1 Corinthians 11, verse 1, he actually says, imitate me as I imitate Christ. So he's not just saying, you know, I'm great in and of myself. Paul's saying, look, I am also imitating. So I'm just one link in the chain of imitation. I'm trying to go to Jesus. You need to go to me because I'm going to Jesus. In 1 Corinthians 4, verse 16 and 17, let's actually go there real quick. I want to show you something very particular in that verse. So hold your finger in Philippians. Go to 1 Corinthians chapter 4 real quickly. I want to show you something there in that chapter. 1 Corinthians chapter 4. I want to look at 16 and 17 of that chapter with you real quick. Look at what he says here. This is very interesting to me, and this is not something that I probably would have written in the same way, but then I'm not inspired like Paul was. So, 1 Corinthians 4, verse 16, he says, again, I urge you then, be imitators of me. And then verse 17, that is why I sent you Timothy, my beloved and faithful child in the Lord, to remind you of my ways in Christ, as I teach them everywhere in every church. So, everywhere I go, I just teach the doctrine of Jesus. That's not what he says. Now, he did teach the doctrine of Jesus, but he didn't teach the doctrine of Jesus as if it's some abstract, head-in-the-clouds theology that doesn't have practical, on-the-ground application. He says, I teach how I act, how I live, my ways. That's what I teach in Christ. And that's what I want you guys to practice. And so I'm sending Timothy not just to teach you about abstract theology. I'm sending Timothy to remind you of what I say and of how I live and how I knock on widows' doors and help them and how I preach the gospel here and how I do things, my ways. It is appropriate to teach our ways in Jesus. That's what Paul did. But I know of preachers, friends of mine, who have gotten up in pulpits and they have said some very, very particular applications and taught some very particular things to their groups which needed to hear what they were saying. And the feedback that they got afterwards was something along the lines of, well, you're just preaching opinions. You ought to stop that. We don't preach opinions. But so here's the thing about that. I understand on the one hand that we are not to be Pharisees. We are not to teach as doctrines the commandments of men. We got to really steer clear of trying to do that. But on the other hand, anytime you make an application, anytime you take a principle from the scriptures and you try to figure out how does that work in my life? How does that work in your life? Anytime you do that, isn't that requiring some judgment, some discernment, some, dare I say it, some opinions? Well, what does that mean? We should just stop making applications? Obviously not. We should stop telling other people about how to apply this in their lives? No, obviously not. We got to do that. But let's keep massaging this point, because I don't want to just leave it right there. But does this mean that all opinions are of equal value? All opinions are created equal? No, it does not. It does not. So what do we do? You ever heard a teacher say, maybe in a classroom growing up when you were in middle school or high school or college, there are no dumb answers here, in an effort to kind of get people to talk? I think teachers should be warm and encouraging, but teachers should not lie. There are dumb answers sometimes. So what do we do about that? Sometimes the teachers of Scripture, like Titus 1 talks about, they need to be able to stand up and tell people to stop talking, to sit down and not keep spouting the foolishness that they're spouting. In Titus chapter 1, Paul actually tells Titus there are many empty talkers among the especially the circumcision party, like former Pharisees running around, who are saying things and upsetting whole families in ways that they should not. And so he says they need to be silenced because they have no right to say what they're saying. We need to, first of all, come to the understanding that just because we have something to say, that does not necessarily mean that it should be said. So how do we know whose opinions to give weight to? Going back to Philippians 3, who does he warn people against that they should not imitate? He says, imitate me and imitate everybody who's trying to follow our example. But who should you not imitate? Whose opinions should be silenced? Whose things should you not listen to? The next verse goes on to talk about people who are just looking to be comfortable. The next verse talks about those who, among other things, in the middle of verse 19, their God, the idol that they serve, is themselves, but more specifically than that, their comfort, their belly, what makes them feel good. So who do we not imitate? Who do we not listen to? Anybody who has perfected the art of pleasing themselves. And their waking moments are spent in thinking, how can I make myself feel good? So we're not looking for the smartest person in the room, the most well-dressed, the most educated, the most whatever in terms of worldly standards of success. We're looking for people who get in the trenches for Jesus, who do hard and difficult things, whether that's hard and difficult physical things in service to other people, or they go and have difficult conversations that need to happen with other Christians. We're looking for those type of people who discipline themselves for the sake of Jesus. So actively choose people like that to mentor you, he says in chapter 3. And then in chapter 4, he's going to say, imitate me again. And I want to look at this with you. Chapter 4, Philippians verse 9. What you have learned and received and heard and seen in me, practice these things, and the God of peace will be with you. I'd say this verse comes across as a little redundant to me. Doesn't it to you? He's written this whole letter to this church. Doesn't that automatically imply that he wanted them to listen and practice these things? Why did he have to say that? Well, think about what Jesus did in his ministry when he would sit in a boat and there'd be this whole big crowd of people on the seashore and he would teach them parables. You know what he constantly said every time he was teaching in situations like that? He who has ears to hear, let him hear. Well, when Jesus was sitting there teaching, didn't that already imply that he wanted them to listen, that he wanted them to chew on these things and practice these parables in the way that he wanted them to? Yes, but sometimes you and I need firm nudges to actually apply our ears and our hearts and our minds to listening like we should. And that's the case here. And the fact is, I want to go to now chapter 2. I'm going to show you something here in chapter 2. We're going to talk about Timothy in a second in this whole section, but I want to pull out something in chapter 2, verse 21. The fact is, where Paul was, he's in prison somewhere, probably in Rome. The Christians around him that he has a chance to rub elbows with are not listening to him. Right? Chapter 2, verse 21, look what it says about those Christians. This is a contrast to Timothy. Right? For they all seek their own interests, not those of Jesus Christ. You see that? This is one of those other broad, sweeping statements that Paul makes where we kind of scratch our heads a little bit and we think, did he really mean that? I think he did. And that's a contrast to chapter 2, verse 4, where it says, with Jesus, chapter 2, verse 4, Jesus demonstrated humility in all these different ways. And so, verse 4, chapter 2, let each of you look not only to his own interests, same word as in 2:21, but also to the interests of other people. So Timothy was good at doing that, but all of these Christians, wherever Paul was, were not good at doing that. They're wrapped up in themselves. To put this in maybe modern day language, they're just thinking about what can they do on the weekends that would be fun and enjoyable. Maybe we'll hit the beach. Maybe we'll go see a movie. Maybe we'll, you know, pick up that hobby that we want to pick up. What kind of house project can I get myself involved in? What can I do to fill up my time, stuff that I want to do for myself? That's their mindset. And so they're not denouncing Jesus on the street corners. They're not getting up and saying, hey, we're all atheists now. But they are just thinking about themselves. And so Paul says, they're not listening to me. I'm a little frustrated about that, but I can send Timothy to you guys because Timothy is different. He cares about you genuinely. And he's gonna do that because he's listening and practicing and following me as I follow Jesus. So this doesn't happen automatically. That's the message here of verse 9. We are looking for people who do this. I want to bring up an example here that I think is relevant to our group. There's just one example. So about a week ago on a Saturday, there was a chance to help Evelyn and Paula move from their house to her folks' house. A lot of furniture to move, a lot of things to kind of pack up and get squared away. And those of us who were there, we had enough to do the job, but we could have used more help. And it could have gone more quickly had we had other people volunteer to do that. So I don't know where everybody was, and so I'm not going to press this point too hard. I want to make that clear. But I will say this. Anytime we miss an opportunity to serve other people, that is an opportunity to reflect personally on whether or not we are actually serving the interests of others or we're serving ourselves. And again, I don't know, maybe you were working, maybe you had a really legitimate reason. Maybe you were looking for a house, maybe you were doing something else. I understand that. But what I am saying is we need to be cautious about this. Because if we're not careful, we can fill up our time and our our clock and our schedule with things that just revolve around our own lives and miss opportunities to genuinely help other people who do need help in our number, in our community. We talk about service, and it's easy to wax eloquent about that on Sunday mornings, but when push comes to shove, where are you? When emails go out and say, hey, can you reserve this time for me to help me? Are we thoughtful about that? All right, let's talk about Timothy now. So go to chapter 2, verse 19. Chapter 2, verse 19. I want to look at people that Paul mentions in this letter who are imitating Jesus like he is, because he told them, remember in chapter 3, verse 17, you got to keep your eyes on other people who are doing this too. Timothy's one example of those people. So let's read this passage. I hope in the Lord Jesus to send Timothy to you soon so that I too may be cheered by news of you. For I have no one like him who will be genuinely concerned for your welfare, for they all seek their own interests, not those of Jesus Christ. But you know Timothy's proven worth, how as a son with a father he has served with me in the gospel. So I hope, therefore, to send him just as soon as I see how it will go with me, and I trust in the Lord shortly, I myself will come also. Timothy was a person who was very familiar to the Philippian Christians, and they would have known who he was. Because in Acts chapter 16, when Paul and Silas first go to the city of Philippi, Timothy, we're told, was picked up in the Derby area by Paul and went with them on that journey wherever they went. So they went into Europe, and he was there. And that would have been a really amazing experience, because they get to convert Lydia and her household. They get to convert the jailer and his whole family. They get to cast out a demon from a possessed girl. So neat things happen, but Timothy, for the very first time, would have seen what suffering for Jesus looks like at the ground level. Because this is the first time that Paul and Silas get thrown into prison. They get a mob that grabs them and puts them in front of the magistrates, rips their clothing off, beats them with rods, I don't know how many times. The Jews were limited to 39 times, 40 times, but no telling what the mob did to these guys. And then threw them in prison and fastened them in the stocks, which would have been extremely painful. Timothy saw all of that happen. Now, you might think that this would be a very scarring experience for him, that he might say, you know what, Paul, I don't really feel comfortable going back there. That's a place where really hard things happened. Can you send me to, you know, Corinth? Can you send me somewhere else? Can I do some other work? But Timothy is very happy to go back to this place. He's very happy to return to these Christians, to work with them and encourage them again. And Paul mentions there in verse 20, I don't have anybody like this guy who is actually going to be deeply from his heart concerned. This is not a let's just make sure we smile on Sunday mornings kind of concern. This genuine concern in verse 20 is a, I want to go back to a difficult location where persecution happened at the very start of this congregation and see what I can do to encourage them. It's the kind of heart that he has. So two questions that we need to ask ourselves. Are we actually genuinely concerned like this for each other? And secondly, do the Christians around us know that we are that concerned? Have we communicated that in some kind of way? Timothy had, and they knew that. The second guy that we want to talk about is right after this passage about Timothy, this guy named Epaphroditus. Epaphroditus, starting here in verse 25. All right, let's read this together. I have thought it necessary. I thought it necessary to send to you Epaphroditus, my brother and fellow worker and fellow soldier, and your messenger and minister to my need, for he has been longing for you all and has been distressed because you heard that he was ill. Indeed, he was ill, near to death. But God had mercy on him, and not only on him, but on me also, lest I should have sorrow upon sorrow. I am the more eager to send him, therefore, that you may rejoice at seeing him again, and that I may be less anxious. So receive him in the Lord with all joy. Honor such men, for he nearly died for the work of Christ, risking his life to complete what was lacking in your service to me. So what's interesting about Epaphroditus is he's not mentioned in a lot of places in the New Testament. In fact, he's only popping up in the book of Philippians. He's here in chapter 2. He's also going to pop up at the end of the letter in chapter 4. He's the person who, verse 18 of chapter 4, has delivered the gifts from the Philippian church to Paul in his imprisonment. So he is a kind of courier who goes, he's a Philippian, but he goes back and forth between this church and Paul. In fact, in the verse that we just read, verse 25, he's actually called a messenger. So he's got that title, sort of. But what we want to notice about him in chapter 2 is that he has the mind and heart of Christ. Notice how he has some anxiety. But why is he anxious? This is interesting to me, because this is the letter where we read Paul saying, be anxious for nothing. But in verse 26, there's some anxiety going on, and Paul doesn't write that off and say he shouldn't have felt like that. And in verse 28, Paul says, and I have some anxiety too about you all. And he doesn't write that off either and say that was inappropriate. So evidently, it is right and good to be anxious about some things, but not anxious about yourself. See, that's the key. Is what is Epaphroditus concerned about? Paul says here, he was sick, almost to the point of death. And it really makes me curious to know the backstory of what was going on with this guy's life. I don't know. And it's just not told to us, so we can speculate, but we're just not going to. But regardless of what it was, it's for the sake of Jesus. It's in service to the Lord and Paul and the Philippians. And he's concerned. Epaphroditus is concerned. But why? Not for his own health. Not for the sake of, am I going to make it through this or not? He's anxious about the fact that the Philippians have heard about him being sick. He's anxious for them because he understands they're sitting there in Philippi while he's out who knows where doing his thing, ill to the point of death. They want to know how he's doing. They're desperate to understand that. And so Paul is also anxious. So he says, I want to send him back so that I don't have to be thinking about the fact that you guys are worried about him. See how this is just constantly thrust out of themselves and onto the lives of other people? Selflessness. So these are people that we are to imitate. Now, I meant to mention when I was talking about the moving day, Mo's not going to like this, me talking about him, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Where's the microphone?
I just love the fact that we had our 85-year-old elder at the moving day, and we did not allow him to pick up a bunch of heavy stuff. We had to guard those things carefully. He was under strict instructions, and we had to really man the heavy furniture. But he was there. And yes, he's retired. And yes, it was his own daughter who was moving. But that happens today. That happened that day no different from what I've seen him do for a lot of other Christians in our church who were not his flesh and blood. He's 85. But he was there. He was there serving, and he bustled around, and he did whatever he could do. Because, like these people that we've been talking about this morning, he's focused on other people's anxiety. He's focused on other people's lives. And when we talk about keeping your eyes on those who walk according to the example of Paul and Jesus, I want to just point out somebody here among us and say, imitate him. Imitate that in your life. All right. Let's end this way. I said at the beginning of the sermon that this is kind of where everything was going. We need to be focused on this question. It's a pretty simple question, but it might be a little complicated when we answer it honestly in our own hearts. Is your life, is my life, worthy of imitation? If people are wondering, how can I learn how to be joyfully uncomfortable? Can people answer that question by looking at my life, by looking at your life? In short, are we showing fellow disciples what a heavenly colonist looks like? Now, we're about to partake of the Lord's Supper. And you remember what Jesus said that final night when he ate that feast with his disciples? Do this in remembrance of me. What did that mean? Did that just mean take a mental photograph of this moment in time and remember us all sitting around the table? That's what it partly meant. But even more than that, it also meant remember what I am about to do in the hours ahead. I'm about to go to the cross. I'm about to die in a horribly mutilated way for your sins. And then I'm going to rise again on the third day. And then you're going to take that message out to the four corners of the earth. Remember that. Remember why you are a Christian. Remember what I did for you that you could not accomplish for yourself. That's what we're going to do today. We're going to remind ourselves of the fact that we are, all of us, imitating Jesus. He gave his sweat, his blood, his body, his emotions, his energy, his breath for us. We have to do that for each other. or we're not going to be a colony for Jesus. So this is our encouragement, but this is also our challenge, welded together in one point. Is your life worthy of imitation?